This is the Echo Network. A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past.
It's a place where I met my wife and my three children were born. And to this day, I'm so proud to call KC home.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's present.
Alex with a basket catch. They're going to send the runner. His throw, a great one! Alex Gordon with a tremendous Gold Glove play.
And a show that looks at Kansas City baseball's future.
With the fifth selection of the 2012 first-year player draft, the Kansas City Royals select Kyle Zimmer.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
This week, we'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is Jamboree night. Bring your crap kick in your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup. Or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends, the best pizza in Kansas City, and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean, and maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Kelly's Westport Inn. Tell them the Royal Man Report sent you.
And welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. I am Troy Olson. I'm joined by Michael Engel. We will be joined by Jeff Hurr later. And then we're going to be joined by Mark Simon from ESPN. A get by Mr. Michael Engel. Engel just gets these people to email him out of the blue and come on the show. So there you go. Mr. Michael Engel, how are you doing today?
I'm pretty good.
Hey, Mike, you know what occurred to me today? And I didn't even tell you this off the air, so I'll just kind of come at you with this.
All right.
Do you know we're almost 2 years old?
Yeah. It's, March of next year?
So I'm thinking that over the next couple of months, I've got to get them together. But we haven't had a holiday party yet. We haven't gotten our birthday party set up. But I would be saying that folks need to keep an eye on the Twitter accounts because I see some parties at Kelly's in our future. We haven't had one in a while.
No, we haven't.
And, I think it's time to get some Ice Baby going on the on the overhead speakers and some brews coming down easy, so it's maybe we can get Fake Net out there to buy a $50 tray of drinks and stick it to Danny Parkins. So
that would be awesome.
If you've missed all these great events over the last couple of years, you've missed out. It's been quite the parties.
Yeah. The Parkins thing is particularly funny.
That one never gets old.
No,
I haven't. It just blows my mind that he just stuck in with $50 in drinks. But yeah, so I was working through all of our plays over the last 2 years and getting everything into a spreadsheet, and it occurred to me how long we'd been doing this and everything. And we did a lot of episodes the week of the All-Star break, I will say that.
Mm-hmm.
So we're gonna talk to Mark Simon today about the trade. Do we even need to refer to it as any way except for that? I think if you just say the trade, people know what you're talking about at this point.
Yeah, I think all caps is a good way to talk about it. I mean, it's the Myers Shields trade is, you know, it's up there with the Zach Greinke trade. It's, you know, it's a franchise-altering kind of thing. So, yeah, I think it's appropriate to just refer to it that way without you know, getting the names involved. And I think people know what we're talking about.
So we're going to talk about that. And Mark Simon wrote an article on it. And if you haven't read it yet, it's up in the Sweet Spot. And I'm sure there's a link to it in the description of this podcast that you're listening to, knowing how Mike does his work. So you'll be able to find it there. But Mark's going to join us here in about 11 minutes. In the meanwhile, we're just going to talk a little bit about what's been going on, and which is really nothing. Ever since the trade, it's been pretty quiet, at least for Kansas City. R.A. Dickey did find a new home, and I think you can kind of look at that trade and maybe not hurt so bad with what Kansas City gave up for James Shields and WD-40, Wade Davis. You know, Mike, what do you think about the trade the Mets made and how it compares to what Kansas City gave up and got?
Well, it's pretty similar. The Blue Jays gave up their catcher, Travis d'Arnaud, who he's one of the best catching prospects out there. And then they also gave up, I forget his name, Noah Snydergaard, who's kind of a high upside guy. He's a little farther away. So it kind of mimics, in a way, you know, it's one of Toronto's best prospects and one of their best pitching prospects for R.A. Dickey. You know, I think if you look at it, I think Will Myers is a better prospect than either of the two that Toronto gave up. And there were other guys involved in the deal, but the primary guys were d'Arnaud and Snydergaard, which are awesome names, by the way.
Yes, and one of the other guys coming from the Mets side is R.A. Dickey's personal catcher. So, and that's not surprising because knuckleballers really do like their catchers.
Someone who can catch it is kind of just as important as having somebody who's comfortable with them, because that's not an easy pitch to get.
No.
But, yeah, Will Myers, I think, is a better prospect than either of the guys that the Mets got. But the Mets got, you know, what they needed. They haven't had a franchise catcher since Piazza was there. You know, and even then, he wasn't that good of a catcher. D'Arnaud can be a lot better as an actual catcher. And they're just rebuilding, and Toronto gets a guy that kind of puts them up there as potential favorites in their division. You know, I think you can debate whether Dickey or Shields is better. Dickey, he feels a little bit more like a risk because there's just not that track record, but I don't see that it's that he's a knuckleballer, so he's a whole different thing. Shields, still a very good pitcher. So, you know, you compare the two trades, it's pretty similar. I would say that the Blue Jays are in a better spot to contend. I don't know. I mean, they're very similar, and it kind of shows that the value that a lot of people thought the Royals gave up is kind of the market trend. So, you know, I guess you can feel a little bit better about it in that regard.
And we are now joined by Jeff Hurd. Jeff, welcome to the program.
How's it going, guys?
How
are
you doing today?
I'm fantastic. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. We were prepping everybody up and talking a little bit about the R.A. Dickey trade. Did you have any opinions on the R.A. Dickey trade and how it makes you feel in comparison to what the Royals got and gave up in the trade earlier this month?
I mean, besides the fact that I wish it was us that got him instead, you know, I think I kind of came in at the tail end of what Mike was saying there, and I'd probably just echo his sentiment there. I don't know that as far as the deal is concerned, a lot of people were kind of crying foul at the time, myself included, and there's a little bit more to it than just the value given up and the value received. But I think in those terms of the value given up and the value received, like Mike was saying, pretty comparable when you factor everything in. And, you know, this looks to be so far this offseason with all the revenues and baseball and everything just exploding. In the past, Dayton Moore has been kind of taken down for misreading the market. You know, you had Bruce Chinn, you had Frank Hoor, you had those deals that he was giving out that he just totally misread. He even admitted the Bruce Chinn deal, he misread the market. Well, now it appears that this time, I think at least, you know, right now where we sit, I think Dayton Moore should be given at least a little bit of credit for reading the market. I still don't agree with the trade necessarily, but between the Guthrie signing and trading for James Shield and everything, seeing what Zach signed for and what Josh Hamilton signed for, even though he's not a pitcher and everything, it looks like he's pretty on par with what the market is. So he at least hasn't grossly overpaid just in terms of the trades themselves, but you know, getting into whether he should have made it or not is kind of a deeper issue that we've talked about before. But those are kind of my initial thoughts from seeing what the Blue Jays gave up to get Dickey.
Now, it was said that it was going to take Myers to get Dickey, and Mike kind of talked about this, and I guess, Jeff, I'll get your opinion. Now, we don't know how much more it might have taken or if it would have taken any more, but would have you traded Myers for Dickey?
It's a weird situation because would I have traded Myers for Dickey? No. But would I have traded Myers for Shields? No. So if Myers is going to be traded, knowing now that we know that he was, I would have traded him for R.A. Dickey, yeah, because it's mostly just a personal preference, to be honest. I mean, there's a little bit more to the idea of when I came into the call, I heard what Mike was saying about how knuckleballers are kind of just a different animal, and that's completely true. And Dickey seems to throw a knuckleball that's just different from what you typically see from like a Tim Wakefield, who's the most recent prominent knuckleballer before him. So, you know, I think there's a lot more value to Dickey, and he could last for a little bit longer. Playing at a higher level than what Shields did, because Shields is the type of pitcher who the older he gets, the faster that drop-off could be versus someone like Dickey, who his could be quite a bit slower. Plus, you factor in that the Blue Jays signed a two-year deal with him, or a two-year extension, so they get three full years, whereas the Royals are still only getting two with Shields. I mean, with all that combined, I would have rather gone the route of getting R.A. Dickey, but, I mean, honestly, I think Dayton Moore had it set out 2 years ago to get James Shields, and he finally got him. And I think that there were certain things that Andrew Friedman was looking for and was kind of holding out for and was trying to get Dayton Moore to give up. I think that's kind of what he got with this whole situation. So I think that's why that whole thing developed. Whereas you don't see the Mets and the Royals talking too often. So I think there was probably just a cursory conversation there, and Moore was more focused on Shields just because he has been for the last couple of years now.
Well, I'll be interested to see what R.A. Dickey does this year. I mean, last year was his first good year, and of course it's as good as you can get, pretty much Cy Young award winning year. We'll see what we get out of James Shields. He's more likely to decline than to find his way back to his Cy Young years, and you gave up a lot for him and Wade Davis, so they need to turn out, otherwise it's going to be another long haul here in Kansas City. But then, you know, like some say, if he doesn't turn out, then at least you won't have to worry about Dayton Moore anymore, because he won't be here either. Moving along here, the Royals signed four minor leaguers and some interesting names you've heard of. Willie Taveras. It's
about all you can get out of them.
Pretty much. Left-handed pitcher George Sherrill, right-handed pitcher Dan Wheeler, and outfielder Xavier the Untire Nady. And for those of you that don't get the Fantasy Focus reference, that's where that comes from. But George Sherrill and Dan Wheeler, guys that have shown the ability to close out games, to be, you know, real lockdown guys, they're definitely a long ways from their prime. Do you see any of these four making a visit to the major leagues at any point this year, Mike?
I think Wheeler's got the best shot. You know, Sherrill is coming off of Tommy John surgery, so he's probably going to be, you know, best case, we'll see him around June, maybe. Once he's, you know, healthy and everything's good, I mean, I think you could see him definitely as a left-handed specialist. He's really tough on left-handed hitters. And, you know, when you look at guys like Donnie Joseph and Tim Collins, both lefties, will probably be in the Royals bullpen. They're not really lefty specialists. They're more in tune with being guys who can go in and face, you know, any kind of batter, regardless of what side of the plate they're on. So I think the pitchers are definitely the two guys. Nady and Tavares, I think Dutton in one of his chats on Twitter today, he was like, someone asked him if Xavier Nady was going to make the lineup, and he's like, if he makes the lineup, something went wrong somewhere. And I think that's pretty much the case for both of those guys. You know, but you never know. I mean, they could figure something out. Nady's been a 20-homer guy. Willie Tavares led the league in stolen bases 1 year. The problem is just that it was like 2008 when both of those things happened. So you can't really put a lot of hopes on them.
Jeff?
Yeah, I'd probably agree with that. I think Cheryl probably with Mike, do you know when he had Tommy John surgery?
It was in May last year.
Yeah, so he probably would be on the same timetable as a Duffy or a Paulino, it seems. But, yeah, I think when he comes back, I think he would probably have the best shot. But you're probably right about Wheeler. Unfortunately, with someone like Nady and Tavares, you know, those are guys that just, I mean, they just scream Royals, don't they? So I just have this, you get that kind of sick feeling when you see that as a Royals fan, when you see that kind of a signing. To see by May, one of those being, you know, nearly an everyday player, or maybe playing 4 days a week, you know, and it's just like, yeah, ideally those players would only play if something went horribly wrong, but that's what we were saying about Uni last year, and nothing really went horribly wrong. Fortunately, the Royals are in a situation where they guilty till proven innocent at this point with the moves they've made, so hopefully that's not the case, but yeah, I mean, I'd say Wheeler's probably got the best shot, but you know, who knows what'll really happen. If it, hopefully this is like a normal organization making these kind of signings, and it's just for organizational depth, and we don't really see much from them. But you know, with the Royals, you just never know.
Never know.
You do never know, but I guess we will see. One last note, and then we're going to get out to break because we got a phone call to make here. But Luke Hochier was on the block, which we know. Apparently, they called the Rockies about him. For the love of God, don't let that happen. That's my second team, and you know, Hochaver gives up enough runs here. Can you imagine him in Coors Field? But we might come back to that later on, depending on how long everything goes with Mark Simon. But we're going to be right back on the other side with Mark Simon. We'll be right back.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages. The Vault.
After a long day, you can only go so far.
Kelly.
You work hard to make the moment right.
Kelly.
You grind it out to make that time yours.
Kelly.
You pound the pavement only to find you're getting closer.
Kelly.
You find the peak and the peak finds you.
Kelly.
When you find the time and she finds the time, make it Kelly.
Kelly.
Kelly's Westport Inn can cause intimate moments and can also cause members of the opposite sex to appear more or less attractive than they actually are. You should speak to a doctor before attempting Kelly's Westport Inn, as the results might be marriage, children, or a one-night stand. Or it might just involve having some beers with your friends, eating some pizza, and watching the games on TV. I don't know. I talk pretty fast.
Kelly's Westport Inn. You know when.
Kelly's.
Tell them you came for the Royal Man Report.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. Troy Olson, Michael Engel, Jeff Hurd, joined by Mark Simon of ESPN, our first ESPN guest. You can follow him at MSimonESPN on Twitter. He is a writer for the Mets and Yankees, co-host Baseball Today, Monday through Friday on ESPN.com, along with Keith Law and Eric Carabell. And he oversees ESPN stats and info and somehow found 10 minutes for us here on the Kansas City Baseball Vault. Mark, how you doing today?
Good. It's a long list. Let me just clarify one thing. It's the ESPN stats and info blog on ESPN.com.
There we go. A lot going on there for you at ESPN, and you took the time to write an article about the AL Central, more specifically, how can the Royals win the AL Central? And personally, this sounds like every conversation we have at the beginning of every season as we sit at Kelly's and have beers here in Kansas City, trying to figure out how it is that the Royals win the AL Central. And as you go through this article, it kind of feels that way, too. If this happens and that happens, and just if, you might find a way to see Kansas City in the playoffs. And I linked your article on Facebook, and one of my Cardinal friends, of course, said if every other team, you know, fails to field a team, then yes, the Royals can make the playoffs. And it definitely feels that way sometimes. What compelled you to write this article?
Well, the moves that they made this offseason to get Guthrie and Santana and Shields and the addition, all the additions that they made, just made them somewhat of an intriguing look. And it's one of those things that I like to kind of play with data and show people that you don't have to be like a mathematical wizard to get through the data and understand it. And I thought that this was a cool way to go about it. I did something similar for the Mets about 2 years ago and got a fun response to it. So I figured it was worth a try to do it this time around, too.
Well, I know I saw it. I know I saw it linked a lot of places. Royals fans love this kind of stuff because we just want to find a way to get us in. I'll go ahead and turn this over to Mike. He's definitely got some questions
sure.
for you.
Yeah, I like the methodology behind it, where you took a look at the average wins above replacement for the last few years in the AL Central as far as the division winning teams. And so the target is 38 wins.
Yep.
A lot of things have to go right, as you point out. So what do you think is the two main things that have to go right for the Royals to even get close to that 38 win spot?
Well, the idea was that last year they had 25 wins, so you need a 13-win jump from somewhere. And in order to get that 13-win jump, the two things I think that you need are you need your good players to perform like great players, and that would fall in line with someone like James Shields being a staff ace and Jeremy Guthrie being a really good number two, and one hitter that was a good hitter last year developing into a superstar-type player, whether that be Moustakas or Salvador Perez over a full season or even Hosmer doing something like that. And the other thing that you need is you need health. You don't want to be relying on the bottom of the bench guys and the quadruple A players for any extended period of time. If you can get 130 to 140 starts out of your starting rotation, I would think that your team's going to be pretty decent.
And that's one of the things last year that really hurt was the Royals just were not healthy. 2 years ago, perfectly fine. I think they had two significant disabled list stints. But you know, last year, Danny Duffy gets hurt, Felipe Paulino gets hurt. This year, you've got a lot of guys like Santana and Shields and Guthrie, guys who can go out there and get you 200 innings, you know, almost every year. You know, does that one of the things that you said that has to go right is that the bullpen can't really regress, that the bullpen has to be pretty similar to how they were last year. Do you what kind of impact is that kind of a rotation going to have on this young bullpen, and is it going to make them possible to be even better than last year, do you think?
You would hope that the idea that Shields regularly goes 7 and Guthrie regularly goes 6-7 and ideally Wade Davis goes 6-7 and Irvin Santana goes 6-7 means that the only day that they really have to worry about using the bullpen of an extended length is when Bruce Chan pitches. But you would figure that with less stress that they should be a pretty good group, and you have a lot of hard throwers in that group, and you have a number of guys that are young, and you would figure the nice thing about the Royals, and this was true for the lineup too, is that the lineup is very young and that you're getting players who should, in theory, as the Rays kind of had play out a few years ago, get better as opposed to getting worse.
On the Guthrie conversation, you did mention in the article that essentially they'd have to – one of the leaps of faith is you have to get a full season out of Guthrie like he did in the second half with the Royals. Is that unbelievable that it could happen in a pitcher-friendly park for a guy like Guthrie who's been known to throw 200 innings? Yeah, sure, he's on the back end of his career, but could we see him produce a whole season like the late second half?
I really think that's going to be very hard. I won't say it's impossible because he didn't, like, with the Orioles last year, you didn't know that Jason Hamill was going to give them the volume of innings that he did, or at least, I mean, he got hurt, but he had a couple of stints and pitched very well for them. You didn't know that Jared Parker was going to do something like that for the Oakland A's last season. 2010, Jeremy Guthrie was a 4-WAR pitcher. 2008, Jeremy Guthrie was a 4-WAR pitcher. 2007, Jeremy Guthrie was a 4-WAR pitcher. He had a 3.7 and a 3.6 and a 3.8 ERA in those years in an environment that was much more, I think, offensively friendly. You're seeing the last few years that offense trending down a little bit. So to convert that to, okay, Jeremy Guthrie last year with the Royals, 3.16 ERA, can he do that over 28 to 30 starts? I don't know, but 3-4, you know, somewhere in the 3-4 range, 3-5 range doesn't seem like a huge, oh my God, kind of thing. So I would say at 3-1-6, not too much confidence, but 3-6, 3-7, not impossible.
Looking at your article and breaking down how close the Royals actually could be to kind of making the playoffs, when you look at the moves like Guthrie and Shields that actually prompted you to write this article, when you look at it, are those something that when you say, hey, when you look at the Royals, those are the moves that might put them over the hump, or was that kind of something that maybe you think, they might be kind of shooting too far there, putting the cart before the horse, not actually be ready to compete to make a move like trade a Will Myers for a James Shields and kind of see how that would have developed. I mean, is that something? Do you think the Royals made the right moves here based on analysis, or do you think
well,
that?
Well, I like the idea of the go for it, and I've worked with people here that worked in major league front offices that always say things like prospects will get you fired. So if you can trade them for established quality major league talent that has proven itself over an extended period of time, when you think the window of opportunity is there, you do it. The problem is that I think the Royals' gap is a lot and maybe too much to overcome. When I did this little exercise, I basically took out a pen and paper and I started writing down numbers for each of the players on the Royals. And when I got to the end, I was still, I think I said it in the article, I was still 4 to 5 wins short of what they needed. So I had taken every possible, what I felt was, I guess you would say, quotes, reasonable leap of faith with the 2013 team, and I still wasn't there. So then I had to take some larger leaps, and I think when you're asking for a lot of larger leaps, your chances go down. If I'm assessing it right now, I don't think they're winning the AL Central. I think the Tigers are. But if you told me that it was a 15 to 20% chance, I think I could go with that. Well, 15 to 20% looks pretty good, right?
I was just going to say, here in Kansas City, 15 to 20% is better than we've had in about 20 years. So that's pretty good. I think I interrupted Troy here, but we're talking with Mark Simon from ESPN, Stats and Info blog from onESPN.com. And, Mark, you brought up the Tigers there, and that's kind of where I wanted to go with my next question. When you look at Royals, even if you take in all these giant leaps that you have to make in order for the Royals to really get to that 38 win mark and 38 war, I should say, mark, and make it to the playoffs, combat that now with the Tigers and what they have, where their main addition is obviously going to be getting back Victor Martinez and getting Anibal Sanchez for an entire year. So the gap was already 16 games between last year. How much further does that put the gap that have to close this?
Don't forget Torrey Hunter too. He'll be their everyday right fielder. I think the gap is still there, and that's why I said a few minutes ago. 15% chance. Maybe you get fortunate. I think what you need for the Royals to catch the Tigers, which I don't think I said in the article, is that you probably need a Tiger pitcher or two to go down, whether it be Verlander, Fisher, or Scherzer. You need to hope that they deal with injuries, maybe the likes of what the Royals have seen in the last few years with some of their pitchers, and that the guys that fill in for them can't get it done, and that they don't bring in Rafael Soriano, and that they go with an inexperienced closer at the back of the bullpen, and he blows 3 or 4 games as opposed to like a team like the Orioles last year, which won like a bazillion games late and outperformed their WAR largely because of something like that. I think the Tigers, at the end of the season, their WAR is going to be higher than the Royals' WAR. It'll be a matter of, were you fortunate in some respect to find a way to overcome that?
Last question for you, and then we'll let you go, Mark. One of the key players is going to be Eric Hosmer this year. And in the article, you mentioned, you know, when you start looking for those extra wins, you actually took him up from 1.3 WAR to 3.3 on the hope that maybe he can become one of those top first basemen in the league. Last year, we saw his batting average on balls in play was very bad.
But for a lot of the time, he's hitting the ball pretty hard. His line drives were about the same. He didn't strike out much more, and he actually walked more. Do you see him as a potential bounce-back player to that extent where he could be a three-war kind of guy?
Yeah, you know, we go to these extremes with players. We spent the last 2 to 3 weeks declaring Will Myers the greatest prospect ever. And you go back to when Alex Gordon was first coming up, and boy, he was going to be something incredible. And then it took him, what, 3-4 years to become the kind of player that you wanted him to be. Well, Eric Hosmer has gotten a taste of being at the very top of the heap with his performance in the high-end minor leagues and then having a good rookie season. And now he's had a taste of what's at the bottom with all the struggles that he dealt with last year. And I think that if you were going to pick someone out of that list of guys and say, this is the guy that's going to take the big jump, it's not that big a jump if you go back to 2010 and you look at the minor league numbers when he hit 330 with 20 home runs in high A and double A to say, hey, he can become a superstar among the guys that you've got. And I don't think that you let one off year, a sophomore slump, do that. Otherwise, you would have poo-pooed Alex Gordon. You would have poo-pooed Brandon Phillips. There's a lot of guys that go through struggles at the start of their career. You just have to be patient. And again, going back to the Rays, if you look at like that 08 Rays team, all the young guys for them became really good players all at once. And they went through their ups and they went through their downs. And to me, it isn't that big of a stretch to say that a guy who was 2 years ago heralded in similar ways to Will Myers that he couldn't become a star player.
Well, we want to thank Mark Simon for coming on with us today. And Mark, thank you very much for taking the time. I do have one quick hit for you. Sure. No analysis or anything on it, but where do the two American League wildcards come from this year? What divisions?
It's so early to pick something like that. All right, let's see. If I'm picking right now, I'm picking the Tigers to win the Central. I'm picking the Angels to win the West. And in the East, I'm taking the Yankees, which means that my wild cards probably have to be the Blue Jays and the, not the Rangers, not really crazy about the A's either. Maybe the Blue Jays and Tampa Bay.
That's kind of where I'm leaning as well, so
that's
I'm not
AL
too surprised
teams.
About that. And that's why the second wild card was made, after all. That's what everybody seems to believe, was to get three AL East teams in there and keep those major markets in play. Mark Simon, thank you very much from ESPN, taking about 15 minutes to join us here today, and we appreciate it a lot. We'll be right back on the other side.
Hi, this is Ned Baudette for Kelly's Westport Inn. Summertime is here, and that means one thing. Your neighbor's cat sneaks over and craps in your garden. No, of course, I'm just joking. Summer also means my neighbor borrowing your boat trailer and driving it into Smithville Lake, or mosquitoes, or your 3-year-old drinking the air conditioner water. Haha, I guess what I'm saying here is that summer means different things to different people. And for 65 years, Kelly's Westport Inn has been a vacation for those summer problems ever since Randall Kelly poured his first frosty draft in 1947. 102 degrees and 99% humidity? Don't worry, Kelly's is air conditioned, and the drinks are as cold as ice. And when the heat breaks, Randall's Rooftop is ready for you to kick back, or you can head downstairs for some of the best live music in town. Summer is different things to different people, but to everyone in Kansas City, Kelly's Westport is your summertime bar. I'm Ned Baudette for Kelly's Westport Inn. We'll leave the taps on for you.
And welcome back to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. Mark Simon, guys, a little bit of ESPN. Let me pat us on the back a little bit here. You know, we've had, in the last couple of years, we've pulled in ESPN, we've pulled in Baseball Prospectus, Baseball America, CBS Sports, going back to Greg Doyle, who's still one of my favorite interviews of all time, that was supposed to be a 20-minute interview and went on for an hour. I mean, it's pretty amazing. You know, before the show, Mike and I were talking, or I guess at the very beginning of the show, before Jeff got here, we were talking about how we're almost 2 years old, Jeff. And it's crazy to think how much we've done with this show in 2 years, and we added to it today with Mark Simon. Mark Simon wrote this article on how the Royals can win the Central, and it's a little tongue-in-cheek, I think, in a way, or you know, showing what a team like the Royals would have to do to get there. And I think that's what scares a lot of Royals fans, is because they gave up what could be end up being a lot for a chance. And one thing we were talking about off the air, and I'll let Jeff take this, is, you know, this team, and Mark Simon talked about this a bit too, but this team is good, but the Tigers got better.
Oh, sorry. Yes, they did. There's your outtick, Roy. That was one of the things that I've kind of argued with people on Twitter about, and people say, oh, you know, this Royals team can win 90 games, everything breaks right, and I don't necessarily disagree with that. I absolutely think, you know, I think this is around. If I'm a betting man, I'm betting on 80 wins. I think 85 wins is absolutely within the realm of possibility. I think going much beyond that is a little bit of a stretch. But yeah, if everything does fall and break right, then they could be a 90 win team. You know, if James Shields pitches with a below 3 ERA like he did in 2011, and if Eric Hosmer hits 330 with 25 home runs, and Billy Butler does what he did last year, and Alex Gordon does what he's done in the last 2 years, and so on and so forth, yeah, that could happen. But even if the Royals win 90 games, you know, that would put the 2012 team in the playoffs, because they would have, you know, Tigers only won 88 games. Or, 88 games. And problem is, the Tigers are getting back. Victor Martinez is one of the better hitters in the American League.
Mm-hmm.
Getting Anibal Sanchez, and people say, well, they had him last year. Well, they only had him for about half a year last year. And now they're getting him for the full year. And I don't know enough about the Tigers' rotation and what it was early on in the year last year to know what kind of a replacement that would be. But I'm guessing it's an improvement. Go out on a limb with that one. And they're getting Torii Hunter, who's going to be their everyday right fielder. And yeah, he's old and he's on the downside of his career, but you know what? He's still a solid player.
And he loves to face the Royals.
I was going to say, Jeff, you didn't say his name right. You needed to preface it with his correct title, which is Royal Killer, Torii Hunter. But you know,
I still don't know why he didn't sign with the Royals instead of the Angels a few years ago when he was a free agent, because he could have just wreaked havoc on Kauffman Stadium for a few years. But
yeah,
because he's so fast too, and if he would have put one into the hole, my goodness, he'd be at third standing up. You know, and I'm going to go a little off of what we normally talk about, but can you imagine when Torii Hunter plays the Angels? He is going to be a man on a mission, and I would want no part of Detroit with Torii Hunter in the lineup against the Angels, because he is an angry, angry man right now.
Yeah, and you know, when you're looking at it from last year, I remember there was a point where Victor Martinez had that injury just before, it was kind of in the middle of the offseason. A lot of people kind of started to think that maybe that's the opportunity. Like, that's the first step. You know, the Tigers aren't as strong. The Royals have a little bit of a window to sneak in there. And then they just go and they sign Prince Fielder. So kind of dashed a lot of those hopes right away. Brought up the Tigers rotation last year. Last year they got 30 or more starts out of Rick Porcello, Max Scherzer, and Justin Verlander. Another 26 from Doug Fister, 18 from Drew Smyly, and then 12 from Anibal Sanchez. The rest, the next closest starter was like 3. So they had a pretty healthy rotation all season. You know, all of those except for Porcello had an ERA under 4. So, I mean, that's kind of what you're up against. The Royals, well, maybe we shouldn't compare the Royals to them at all, because it was pretty awful.
And what Mark was kind of saying was they had, if the Royals want a real shot, they're going to have to hope one of those pitchers goes down. And yep. If I'm not mistaken, I don't know that any of those pitchers with the possibility of Porcello have that much of an injury history. I know Verlander doesn't. I'm pretty sure Sanchez doesn't, but I haven't looked into all of them. But I don't think they have that great of injury history.
Sanchez does, and there's some question about that. I mean, he's had shoulder surgeries from when he was coming up as a minor leaguer. I believe he's had a Tommy John surgery, it was about 6 years ago. So he's, you know, there's a question there. He's not a safe guy, but he's been healthy and he's pitching well.
Looks like he's pitched over 195 or more innings the last 3. Mm-hmm. So, you know, not a huge workhorse, but
yeah,
195 innings of of sub 3.3 ERA would light Kansas City on fire. So,
yeah, and you're looking at, you know, you've got four legitimate guys who can go 200 innings next year, and I mean it's tough, but you know I would think Scherzer's maybe a guy who could end up having some kind of injury just because it, I don't know, it's just a hunch. It seems like he's due for something maybe. That's not a very scientific way to go about it, but it's just what it feels like.
Hey, Royals, you know, fans, nothing scientific about it.
Right.
Royals, period.
Right. Maybe the key to this season is for the Royals to change their name. In 2008, Tampa Bay changed their name from the Devil Rays to the Rays and went on to win the American League pennant with a team that nobody thought had any business getting there. And could Jeff, could this team maybe pull off a 2008 Rays-type season?
Well, first of all, I'm glad you brought this up because I've had a pet theory of mine. There are two major theories that I've had involving sports. One involves football, so it's not really relevant here. But the other one is talking about a uniform change. And I actually think, you know, I think you kind of brought that up jokingly, but not necessarily a name change so much, but a uniform and a logo change and everything. The Chiefs and the Royals have not changed a single thing about, with, I guess, if you want to talk to Royals, they've changed the powder blues to the whites, but or grays or whatever. But for the majority of the time, they haven't changed a single thing about their logo, their colors, since they came into existence, either team, unless you count the change from the Texans to the Chiefs. But anyway, I mean, you go back and look through history, like the Denver Broncos, when they changed, they won two Super Bowls. Tampa Bay, when they changed their uniforms, was when they started on their run and eventually won a Super Bowl. That's, I'm talking about the Buccaneers there. And then you got the Rays, where they changed their name completely, changed a little bit about their logos and everything, and switched. So I think there is something to that. You talk about changing cultures, especially when you come to a losing organization like the Royals and the Chiefs. And so, you know, if the Royals were to change their name, obviously they wouldn't change it, but maybe change the logo a little bit, maybe tweak the colors, add an accent color or something. Who knows? You know, something like that seems stupid, but so. But you know, I think there is some slight evidence out there to support it. But
what about the Yankees?
Well, the Yankees were—they didn't have any culture to change because they had a winning culture.
Okay, I gotcha.
Well, not in the '90s. I mean, true. Don Mattingly never won a ring.
What?
Not in the '90s. Don Mattingly never won a ring.
I don't think he even made a playoff game.
Yeah, I'm not sure he did either. But I didn't want to say that because I didn't have that. For
I mean,
sure.
You've got like your Green Bay Packers and teams like that, but when you look at like look at the Giants, you know, I mean they changed. Well, I guess they won with both with the old logo too, so I guess it didn't really mean too much. But it's like I said, it's not foolproof, but it's a pet theory.
Well, the Royals love these cheesy slogans, and they could definitely do something with new attitude and, you know, new team, whatever. But a little tidbit for those of you that aren't up on your Tampa Bay Rays history. Before they changed the name from the Devil Rays to the Rays, which, by the way, if you're a member of the Tampa Bay media and you say Devil Rays, you have to give a dollar to one of the team charities. But the other options that were considered were the Aces, the Bandits, the Cannons, the Dukes, the Stripes, and Stuart Sternberg's personal favorite, and I agree with this one, and if they were ever going to change the Royals' name, this would be one I'd be behind, and that's the Nine. I like that. It's a little, takes you back to kind of an old-school team name, and it'd just be the Nine, you know, they're the Nine out there. The Kansas City Nine.
I'm curious what the logo would be with that. Just a number nine and some
number
weird
nine.
Who knows? You could do about anything. I mean, shoot, the Blues have a bear running around. I mean, I'm sure you could do pretty much whatever you want with
you can keep
Slugger and figure it out from there. You could probably keep the Slugger logo as your Royals logo. But yeah, we're not going to St. Petersburg and we're not changing our name to the Nine. So we'll see what happens with this team and maybe they do. I guess I've changed and maybe this team's just broke me down a little bit after everything that went on last year with you know, being so hyped for the All-Star game and really expecting something big out of this team. And I guess I better be careful because I forget who said it, but one of my Twitter followers says, I'm so tired of listening to everybody who's down. Outside of Casey Royalman's podcast, there's nobody that has any sort of energy for the Royals. And I take that as a compliment. I mean,
they obviously didn't listen to our shows from last April. Those were miserable.
I think we always try to put a positive spin on things, but I think life should have a positive spin. So it's just how we are. But I mean, I'm not seeing this team make the playoffs. I wanted this team so bad to be five. I mean, Jeff, you guys remember sitting at Kelly's last year? It was the end of year party last year. Before the year of the All-Star game.
Yeah,
so going back a full year, we sat there, that actually was the night of the $50 bar tab for Danny Parkins that Chris stuck him with. We were out there, we had all the mics, we were all set up, and we had everybody tell us what they were picking that night. That was when we were just out of the regular season 2 years ago, and you had to make your prediction for the Kansas City Royals. And I think all of us, including Danny Parkins, picked 81-81 or something similar, 82-80, 80-82, and we were nowhere close. How can I expect this team to make the playoffs when I haven't even seen this team make 500 but once in my lifetime?
Yeah, I think, and kind of your original question of can they be the 2008 Rays, I mean, both 2008 Rays and the 2012 Royals have James Shields, so whatever that's worth. But there's just so much that the Rays had going for them that, I don't know, I guess the Royals have some of it too. And maybe I'm like you, Troy, like you were saying, Troy, and I've just been beaten down. But, the Rays, they did it with pitching. And the Royals, that's what they're going to try to do. But so many of the Rays pitching was just developed, you know, by them. And they had James Shields. I mean, look at this rotation. I pulled it up 2008. Their rotation from 2008 was James Shields, who was 26, Andy Sonnenstein, who was 25, Matt Garza, who was 24, Edwin Jackson, who was 24, and Scott Kazmir, who was 24. And all of them pitched 150 innings or more for that team, including James Shields pitching over 200, big surprise. So it's, you know, I don't know if the Royals recreate something like that, and maybe they do, but you know, it's just the Rays were so fortunate, and they had all their players hit that year. That was probably a year before they were actually ready to contend. It just everything fell into place, because then you look at 2009 and they only won 84 games, and they still had roughly the same roster, and they had in 08 David Price didn't even come up until the playoffs because he was a rookie. So his rookie year was actually 2009 the next year, and they only won 84 games. I mean, I say only, that'd be the most in 20 years for the Royals, but you know, they've won 90 years or 90, just about 90 every year since, I think. So, you know, everything broke right. And if everything does for the Royals, I mean, there's no way, I still don't think this team would win 97 games like the Rays did that year. And it all comes back to pitching and the Royals' failure to develop it. And I think we're not going to go into that now because I've been there before. But we, you know, I could see with the 2012 Royals what the 2008 Rays maybe should have been, which is that mid 80s win team. And then, you know, the Rays kind of took that next step forward the next year or two. And even though 2008 they went all the way to the World Series and haven't been back since, but, you know, really asserted themselves as a team to be reckoned with and not just a fluke. You know, so I think the 2012 Rays or 2012 Royals could be that version of the Rays. And then you look at, or I'm sorry, 2013 Royals. And then you look at 2014 as a year where they can take that huge leap forward if they have people like Kyle Zimmer and John Lamb. We're not going to get into all the prospects that could possibly come up. But, I mean, the short answer is no, I don't think they could be the 2008 Rays. But, you know, we keep doing this to ourselves, but yeah, you know, if you twist some things, they could be, you know, they could make that run and some things could fall right, but it never does for Kansas City sports. So,
Well, I'll say this. If the Royals win 97, well, even if they do what Tampa or Toronto did that year, they went 86 and 76 to finish fourth in that division. And I think the Yankees, I don't have it in front of me, but I'm pretty sure they had several injuries and were 89 and 73 and so missed the playoffs that year as Boston snuck in or didn't sneak in. Boston won their way to the wild card and then got beat in the ALCS by Tampa Bay. But I'll tell you this. If there's a 97-win team coming out of Kauffman Stadium, there's going to be a lot of new members of Kansas City next year, because there's going to be a lot of baby making going on, because there's going to be some real excited people in this town to see a team do that.
Troy, I have a question for you guys. I put this out on Twitter and got kind of varied responses, but I mean, we've talked about whether or not Jim Shields was worth it and whatnot with the Will Myers trade. So here's the question. You talked about a 97-win Royals team, but let's say the Royals win 90 games, right? Just out of this world, amazing season from everybody who needs to have one, 90 games, but they're the Rays from last year, win 90 games and don't make the playoffs. Say that happens this year and next year, two 90-win seasons, don't make the playoffs either year. Does that still make it worth it?
Only if they do something to continue the winning. If we win two 90-win seasons, but then the Royals become back to being what the Royals have been for the last 20 years, then no, it's not worth it. And I do need to correct one thing. I did say the only winning team in my lifetime. Obviously, I'm 32 years old. The Royals have won a World Series in my lifetime. I was 5. But, you know, I consider my baseball lifetime pretty much everything from, like, 1990 on. That's when I really kind of got into the sport. So, And the Royals have, you know, not been very good in that time frame. But, no, it's not worth it, to answer your question. And I'll let Mike answer. But this team needs to now show, if they win two 90-win seasons and Dayton stays around, and then he needs to show that he can be a major league manager and get the job done.
Yeah, I think this next year is going to be the year where they get closer. No, I kind of have this idea of 84 wins in my head. You know, I think Sal Perez, we're going to have him all year. I think Hosmer is going to have a good year. You know, I think Moustakas is probably going to be better. I mean, he was pretty miserable the second half. You almost have to think Frank Hoare is going to be a little bit better. And I'm not worried about Butler or Gordon. So I think the offense will see some improvement, and the rotation has improved. Even if you look at kind of what the, you know, what some of the numbers would say, the Royals, you know, they statistically should have won 74 games if you kind of look at run differential last year. So, you know, if maybe they improve a little bit and then they end up, you know, making that big leap with an improved rotation and get a little bit of luck, yeah, I think 84 is in play. And then 2014 is kind of the year where you have Danny Duffy back for a full year. You have, theoretically, Felipe Paulino for a full year. Urban Santana is gone, but those guys step in there. You know, I think then you have an opportunity, plus whatever free agents are out there. And then if they do happen to go through and win, you know, 84 and then they win 90, well, now you've got a chance to maybe sign some free agents, because it looks like a much better landing spot. You know, you look at guys who have signed in Washington recently. You know, a couple of years ago, nobody would go to Washington. And then all of a sudden they get Strasburg, and they get Jordan Zimmermann, and they get, you know, Bryce Harper, and people get healthy. And, you know, then they start signing guys like Edwin Jackson, and they sign Dan Heron, and people are starting to see them as a destination. So that might be what the path ends up being. But if they end up going 2 years, you know, they exhaust the rest of James Shields' contract and they don't make the playoffs or they don't improve significantly, yeah, it's going to be a big loss on that trade, because I think Will Myers is for real. And I think 2 years from now, it's going to look pretty, it's going to look a little bit lopsided, because I just think he's going to hit.
Yeah. And I think you kind of hit on the right point, and that's, I do think there's a little bit of a fire under Dayton Moore's seat this year, but yeah. I don't think he's in a ton of jeopardy. I mean, if they go out and win 72 games or less, I think his job.
Oh, he's done. He's gone.
But yeah. I think if they go out and they win 80 games or more, I think he's 100% safe. And, you know, whether people agree with that or not, but I think 2014 is that true no excuses year. You know, I mean, you talk about the process. Well, that would be what, the eighth, ninth year? Eighth year. And so that is the year that they wouldn't have any excuses. You'd have Danny Duffy should be healthy, like you were saying, Paulino. Then you've got the young guys. I mean, I think there's an outside shot, especially if the Royals are competing, that if Kyle Zimmer zooms up the minors, you could see him at the end of 2013. John Lamb, he's probably going to start the year in Double A. So if he moves to Triple A by the All-Star break, you could see some of him. And I'm not saying they're going to play huge parts in the Royals playoff run, but what I am saying is that they should be ready by 2014 to take that step in the majors and be important parts of this team. So that's the true year that I think Dayton Moore would stake his claim on, because he'd still have James Shields. Urban Santana would be gone. They'd free that money up to fill whatever hole they need, and then they could hopefully free up that roster or that rotation spot with a Duffy or Paulino or Zimmer or Lamb or somebody, and then have a little extra depth in there. So, I mean, I think you're right. The 84-85 win range is what keeps Dayton Moore's job safe. I think that's what they're going to get. And then I think 2014 is absolute no excuses. They need to make the playoffs. I mean, if the Royals go out in 2014 and win 95 games and don't make the playoffs, I think Dayton's job will still be safe.
What are you going to do about that? Yeah.
I mean, how often does that actually happen? So, you know, I think that's what we're looking at here. And it's unfortunate to still be in that next year mode, but I truly, truly do think it's that they're really, really close. And 2014 is the one year that I will not be saying anymore, oh, well, there's this, or making any excuses. There's absolutely no excuses that year. And, you know, this year I think will tell a lot of how close they are and whether or not that leap is just a step in 2014 or if it's an actual leap. So that'll be probably the most interesting story. 2013.
The thing about 2014 is it's also Dayton Moore's last year on his contract. So you kind of get into, you know, I watched Moneyball over the weekend, and one of their first scenes is Art Howe talking about how he doesn't have an extension and how he can't really trust to go out there without an extension. And I think that's the same thing that Dayton Moore is going to run into, is that, you know, he knows at this point that he's going to have to do something, because the last time he signed an extension, it was 2009. So at that point, you know, he had, you know, still, you know, another season and an option year for 2011. So, you know, he wasn't under any kind of real stress to do anything but build up the system and make whatever he could out of the major league team. You know, these next 2 years, you know, it's make or break for him. So, you know, I think they kind of have to have that same mindset that if they don't do, you know, if they don't get to where they're pushing and knocking on the door, you know, there's going to be changes. And, you know, I think that's just the way it's going to have to go.
Well, let's get ready to wrap this up. And I want to bring up one more thing, and I don't really want to go into a real long thing on it because I don't think we need to, but we get it. The Kansas City fan base as a whole does not like Jeff Francoeur. You know, it's like Kevin Goldstein said, if you don't like Jeff Francoeur, then you're an asshole, on an earlier episode of the Royal Man Report. But I think there's a lot to be said for not liking Jeff Francoeur, the baseball player, right now. I know that he had a lot of problems in New York with personal attacks and what have you. But hold on just a second. Stupid cold. but he, you know, the thing that you got to take away is that he is no longer the baseball player that he seems to be, or he's good 1 year in it with a new team. So now you're talking about, who do you put out there to platoon with Jeff Francoeur? Well, the answer to that is nobody, unless for 6 to 8 weeks he looks like crap, and then they will. So if you're going to go get somebody, you can't spend very much to get him because he's not going to be a starter, and so you can't give up a big prospect to get him. And you've seen the prices on players this offseason. I'll give each of you guys one guy. Who do you get to replace Jeff Francoeur? What do you give up to get him? Mike, you can go first.
Put me on the spot here. You know, I know Ryan Sweeney is kind of a popular guy out there, so I'll say him. You know, I think ideally who I'd like to get is – like Nick Swisher, who is kind of the anti-Francoeur. He's good every year. He gets on base all the time. He always hits for power. But he's going to be, you know, he's going to be a little too pricey. So it's not going to happen. But when you look at, you know, Ryan Sweeney, he's a left-handed guy. He's had some success. He's able to get on base. He just doesn't have a lot of power. So if you can maybe platoon those guys, that would be an option. And I don't think he's going to be that expensive to bring in.
Yeah, yeah. I my first inclination was looking at the Nick Swisher as well. Yeah, he'll probably be too pricey. You hear Michael Bourne's name a lot, and I mean, I think that'd be a good
That's
way to
a
go.
Jump.
Too, I mean, I think he's going to be quite a bit expensive, quite a bit more expensive than the Royals could afford. But you know, it's somebody who's available, I suppose. So if we're just playing the fantasy game, that's who you look at. But yeah, Nick Swisher would probably be the closest to affordable. Other than that, I mean, as far as I don't even know if I know, and I'd have to do a little bit more research to find out who would even be out there that would be at that kind of level of not what Jeff Francoeur is, but what he should be.
Alvin Young's out there.
That is true, yes. Well, Xavier Nathan, right? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's basically the same player with three different names.
Well, I'll say this. I put this out on Twitter, and you know, the comment, there was mixed reviews on this, and I think it's something that the Kansas City fan base might go for, but there was some argument that it could be the worst offensive outfield in history. But I'm not against, if Francoeur can't get it going, I'm not against putting a healthy Lorenzo Cain, Jerod Dyson, and Alex Gordon in the outfield. If we had to go out and get somebody, or if we could and went out and got one of the extra Angels outfielders, you know, of course I'd love to have Mark Trumbo, because I would buy a Trumbomb Royals jersey. I think that would be sweet. But I don't think it's going to happen. No. I wouldn't give up anywhere near what it would cost to get either of the guys that you could get from the Angels to fill that spot. It ain't worth it. We'll see what Francoeur does, but I'm not against seeing what we have on this team already and letting, you know, let Jerod Dyson come in and fill in for Cain and Francoeur once a week, and maybe Gordon once every 10 days. And then if Francoeur starts to stink, then maybe he fills in for Francoeur twice a week, or you start playing the splits game and figure out where you can have your best three outfielders out of those four. And, you know, we do have some outfielders in the minor league still. I know that everybody thinks Will Myers played all nine positions down in AAA, but there are other guys down there, and it'd be interesting to see. You know, Abreu can play some outfield. There's some other...
I don't know about that.
Well, he has.
I have too, but they're not going to sign me.
He has in the major leagues.
I think if you're looking at, I think if you're looking down to AAA as someone, I mean, I think David Lowe's your best bet
David
there.
David Lowe, yep.
Absolutely.
He's shown that he can be a competent major league player. Yep. He's got decent speed, plays decent defense. He's the guy that I look at that if you're going to go that route where you're just going to say, sorry, Frenchie, you're not cutting it, you're going to bench him. I'd rather throw David Lowe out there for the first half of the season and see what he can do. And we already know what Jerod Dyson is, and I think we only kind of saw a small piece of what David Lowe could be. So that's probably who, if you're going to look at AAA, that's who I'd look to.
Yeah, but didn't Dyson improve? I mean, his defense looked bad, and he does need to take better tracks on the ball and not always count on his speed. But didn't his bat look better last year? I mean, I thought his numbers were up from years prior.
I mean, he did get on base a little bit more. He hit a little bit more. He's, you know, still not great. There were stretches where he looked all right, where he did get on base. You know, I'll give him credit for that. But there are also times where it seemed like he was striking out a lot. So he's just not consistent. And it's tough to rely on a guy like that.
At least he didn't turn out to be Guthrie, which he very easily could have been. He's been better than that. So that's a plus for somebody coming through the Royal system.
I guess.
Doesn't David Lowe have the Kansas City Baseball Vault curse on him, though, right now?
Is there a curse? What happened?
It's not a bump. It's not a bump. Go through and look at the players that have been on this show.
It's like a curse waiting to happen. It looks like a bump, and then it jumps up.
Yeah, it's a bump at first, and then it curses on the back end.
And then he got called up like a week later or something, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he struck out every at bat he had in the
major leagues. He got traded to the team that struck him out, or picked up, whatever.
Yep.
Danny Duffy came on, had elbow surgery.
Yeah. Brian Pena gone.
We talked to Gio, too.
Yeah, and we talked to we didn't have Monty on. Monty was the only one in that trade that – we didn't talk to Myers or Monty, but we had talked to – yeah, we talked to Gio, and he had his down year. We talked to Jake Odorizzi. Didn't we – no, I guess we didn't do Jake Odorizzi on the radio show.
Kamler did.
Yeah,
so
– a little bit.
So
– talked to Will Myers, I think.
Yeah, I think
and he talked to Montgomery too.
Well, see, there you go.
So it's the Candler curse. It's not us, guys. Candler was on all those shows too.
You know what? I'm all for this. Let's blame.
It's,
let's
it's
blame
the fake net curse.
It even sounds.
And
good.
Then he went surfing.
Yeah, maybe that was the captive of the curse, is him going surfing and nearly.
He was
dying,
wearing
the
little
so.
Tiki idol from the Brady Bunch.
Something, man.
All things aside, though, you know, we'll throw out a speedy recovery. He just had surgery. So, hopefully he's
good
feeling better.
First to Chris out there.
Yeah. He's high anyway.
Well,
he's not going to hear us.
He's
stoned out of his mind. So, all right. Well, on that note, I think we've kind of we're definitely not getting back to baseball. There's not a lot of baseball going on. There will be a show before Christmas Eve. I'm going to try to get with the guys and see if we can get a show together. If not, I will definitely do a show, and I'll get us some guest stars to go with it, and maybe a guest or two to actually to be on it as well. But we'll have something up before Christmas, and then we'll have something up before New Year's Day. And then hopefully after the first of the year, we'll start to get some more baseball news. And if not, we're just going to keep chucking along. We did it all last season for you, and it worked great. So there's still a big interview to come this off season, as long as it comes through for me. But I'm not going to mention it until I know that that it's in place. But we'll have plenty more to come for you. And if there's somebody you really want us to talk to that we've talked to in the past, please let us know. We've got all of our old contacts, and we're always efforting to get the people you want. So I think on that note, we're gonna call it a night. And for Michael Engel and Jeff Herr, I'm Troy Olson. This has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault. Stay tuned, because the parties are coming up this offseason. We're going to do some live shows, and we might have some special guests out there from other shows as well. So stay tuned for that. But until then, go Royals.